Down in South Africa, today is a very special day. It's the anniversary of the Battle of Blood River. A huge Zulu army of around 20,000 attacked the Boer trekkers, the Boer farmers, consisting of around 400 men. Not pretty good odds, huh? The battle started at sunrise, and it was all over by midday. More than 3,000 Zulus were killed, while only 4 of the Boer trekkers sustained minor injuries. Utterly amazing result. So today is a public holiday in South Africa. It was called the Day of the Vow. They've since changed it to the Day of Reconciliation as they try and pull all the warring parties together, and they're having a bit of a rough time doing it. It's a religious public holiday in South Africa. It's an important day for Afrikaners, originating from the Battle of Blood River on the 16th of December, 1838, before which 400 Boer trekkers made a promise to God that if he rescued them out of the hands of the approximately 20,000 Zulu warriors they were facing, they would honor that day as a Sabbath day in remembrance of what God did for them, which is rather interesting. They being quite a God-fearing people in their own way. And the vow was this. We stand here before the holy God of heaven and earth to make a vow to him that if he will protect us and give our enemy into our hand, we shall keep this day and date every year as a day of thanksgiving, like a Sabbath, that we shall build a house to his honor whithersoever it would please him, and that we will also tell our children that they should share in that with us in the memory of future generations for the honor of his name, who will be glorified by giving him the fame and honor for the victory. Interesting. You don't kind of tend to get that attitude in today's world, do you? Not at all. It's very impressive. The Boer trekker, they built a monument in Pretoria, a rather large, square, box-like granite structure. Quite huge. It's almost like a cathedral in a sense, but it's more like a cube. Very big cube, rather unique. On the top, they have a hole in the actual roof. And on this day, just this day, the sun is in exactly the right position to shine through that hole and spot onto the cenotaph, which is the symbolic tomb of Piet Retief and his delegation, who were actually murdered by Dingaan. Very, very interesting. And it formed the basis of the Afrikaner nation. They firmly believe that God is with them in what they're doing. But you know, it brings up a couple of questions which I'd like to go into today. First of all, one thing we've got to keep in mind, God determines the outcome of wars. Very important. Turn to Psalm 33, if you would. Psalm 33 in verse 10. I'm going to read this from the New International Version because it's a bit easier to read. The Lord frustrates the plans of the nations and thwarts all their schemes. In fact, as is mentioned in the Sermon 8, you know, God is in total, absolute control. And we'll see this coming out all through the sermon. But the Lord's plans stand firm forever. His intentions can never be shaken. What joy for the nation whose God is the Lord, whose people he has chosen as his inheritance. The Lord looks down from heaven and sees the whole human race. From his throne above, he observes all who live on the earth. All, not just Israel. He made their hearts so he understands everything they do. The best equipped army cannot save a king, nor is great strength enough to save a warrior. Don't count on your war horse to give you victory. For all its strength, it cannot save you. But the Eternal watches over those who fear him, those who rely on his unfailing love. He rescues them from death and keeps them alive in times of famine. Interesting comment. Now, just turn to Revelation 17, if you will. Because as we go through all this material we've got today, you've got to keep this verse in mind. Revelation 17, verse 17, you should stick it on the fridge and make sure you understand it and that you know it and that you can quote it, because it is so vitally important, and it's the reason why, frankly, the world is in such a mess, because they don't believe this. No matter what happens, God is in control. For God has put a plan in their minds, a plan that will carry out his purposes. They will agree to give their authority to the scarlet beast so that the words of God will be fulfilled. In other words, God broadcasts just the same as Satan. He puts thoughts in people's mind. He guides them. He leads them. He directs them. And that's actually what's happening today. Mr. Armstrong says, our peoples have basic lessons yet to learn. The true values are spiritual. Actually, God's law is a spiritual law. It involves physical acts, but it is based on spiritual principles, and it requires God's Holy Spirit dwelling in the mind to fulfill. And there, of course, is the problem. There's not much Holy Spirit around today, is there? We've got a whole lot of people running around with half a brain, and that's dangerous. Well, one of the things I want to concentrate on today is the following. And Mr. Armstrong makes this quote. The very fact of, he's talking about national punishment. That this is what God is going to be doing and is doing right now. The very fact of punishment implies correction. We need to understand that correction is applied to correct wrong ways that are harmful to us, to turn us around the right ways that will cause the desired blessings. Understand, God punishes every son that he loves. And he mentions there Hebrews 12 verse 6. And this is a fact. And again, people don't believe this. You know, they believe in the small God, the gentle Jesus, the little baby rocking in the cradle or in the manger or will. And we just heard in the sermonette, you went through that in what, 2 minutes? All we're told, up until Christ went off and got baptized at age 30. All takes 2 minutes. God does not want us to focus on that. This is where he wants us to focus. He's in total control. He's got an end plan. The plan will not be thwarted. So, when did the correction start? Well, it's been ongoing for centuries, millennia. But right, frankly, in our modern era, the punishment started in 1914. That's where the problem starts. According to Mr. Armstrong, World War I. After blessing modern-day Israel, our people sinned very quickly. After the 1800s and America coming together and the British Empire building up, and Queen Victoria was actually the Empress of India. I mean, you know, we had a world-ruling government in a sense. People don't realize the vast scope of what was the British Empire. Sun never set on it. The rebellion against God's way of life descended into Satan worship, both in America and in Britain. The Ouija boards, the spiritualism, the seances, the mediums and so on, all very, very, very popular. Even Queen Victoria used mediums to contact her dead husband. And it was well known. This wasn't something done in a dark alley. It was well understood by everybody. Ouija boards were in common use to contact the spirit world. It was all the vogue. So, Mr. Armstrong says, the world trouble began in 1914 with World War I. There was a recess from 1918 until 1939. We are in the second recess right now. But now at least we have nuclear energy. We have hydrogen bombs stockpiled in such power and volume they could blast every human life off the planet several times over. That's encouraging, isn't it? Especially looking at some of the situations at the moment where it's not inconceivable that they could be used. Today's world-famous scientists say only a super world government can prevent world cosmicide. Yet men cannot and will not get together to form such a world-ruling government. It's just not on. We've seen all sorts of attempts. And then the Catholic Church has made quite a lot of attempts to take over everything. And for a while, they did. They up until the time of Napoleon, they controlled much of the known world. So the question is, how does God punish nations? So if you'll turn to 2 Samuel 24. 2 Samuel 24. And we'll see how God actually punishes nations. This incident took place after David had numbered Israel. What was so wrong about numbering Israel? Well, he was doing it to see how strong and powerful and mighty Israel was. And it was quite strong and powerful and mighty, but not quite the way he thought. Joab told him straight out, don't do it. You don't dare do this. And he just overruled him, went ahead and did it. And of course, yeah, it became a problem. So 2 Samuel 24, verse 11. When David was up in the morning, the word of the Eternal came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, go unto David and say, thus is the Eternal, I offer you three things. Choose one of them, that I may do it to you. So Gad came to David and told him, and said unto him, shall 7 years famine come unto you and the land? Or will you flee 3 months before your enemies, while they pursue you? Or that there be 3 days pestilence in the land? Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me. That's exactly the kind of choice you're going to get thrown at you in the middle of breakfast. Yeah. But David was very realistic. Verse 14. And David said to Gad, I'm in a great strait. Let us now fall into the hands of the Eternal, for his mercies are great, and let me not fall into the hands of men. Interesting to note here that the three things, the famine is an end time problem. It's all through Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26. Famine's mentioned several times. 3 months before your enemies, again, one of the curses that were given in Leviticus and Deuteronomy. And of course, the pestilence. What can we say about the pestilence? So the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning even to the time appointed, and there died of the people from Dan even to Beersheba. That's the full length of the country. 70,000 men. Men. That's families left without a husband. Children left without a father. Can you imagine how bad this was? And it all happened within 2-3 days. Verse 16. And when the angel stretched out his hand upon Jerusalem to destroy it, he was making sure he got could fulfill the job. The Lord repented him of the evil and said to the angel that destroyed the people, it is enough, stay your hand. So Jerusalem. But evidently the destruction came right up to the border of Jerusalem. So this is a terrific event, but it just shows this is how God punishes nations. To take 70,000 people out of a nation, these are people who have businesses, they are people who farmers, they are people who are probably in the army. This is the whole, it's almost like gutting the nation. This must have put them back years before they could really get back on their feet again. But again, it was a terrible lesson that King David had to learn. Well, let's have a look at World War One. That over 100,000 U.S. servicemen were killed through the war. They lost 675,000 people to the Spanish flu epidemic that came right after it. These figures, by the way, I've kind of chosen a middle ground. Because when you look at the Spanish flu, some people will say, well, there were between 70 and 80 million people killed by it. That's how good the estimates are. So it's very difficult to get an exact number, but they're big numbers. Over 100,000 were killed. They lost 675,000 through the Spanish flu. The disasters they had then, there was more casualties than in World War One, World War Two, the Korean War, and Vietnam combined. That's what they lost at the end of by the end of World War One. Now that's called correction. But did we learn? Did our people learn? Not a chance. straight into the roaring 20s, a time of rapid social and cultural change, when the moral values of people disappeared with a skirt length. You know, in the First World War, ladies wore long skirts. By the time we got to the 1920s, they were above the knees somewhat. It's quite interesting how it goes up and up and up as the morals degenerate. Come to World War II, the second dose of correction. U.S. war deaths, around about 400,000. 384,000 British soldiers were killed in combat. 70,000 civilians were killed in bombing raids and so on. But, you know, after World War II, straight back to spiritualism. My own mother admitted that she and some friends tried the Ouija board. You know, evidently what you do with this wretched thing is you stick it on the table and you put a glass tumbler in the middle, and everybody puts their hand on the tumbler. And then you ask it questions. And all around the edge are the letters of the alphabet. And it points to different letters, allegedly. So they asked it, who controls you? And the answer was, Satan. It gives you some idea as to the Ouija board was put straight on the fire and never discussed again. They were shocked. They were shocked. They were still shockable, but of course a lot of people weren't. After World War II, a major change. You know, back in Leviticus, it keeps talking about seven times. Sometimes it's a time, sometimes it's intensity of punishment. Something happened after World War II. Mr. Armstrong writes, after World War II, a major change occurred. And he quotes, first of all, Micah 5, verse 9, thine hand shall be lifted up upon your adversaries, and all your enemies shall be cut off. Up to that point, they were cut off from the beginning of God's birthright blessings on America and Britain, starting around 1803, through the First World War, the Second World War, until the turning point of the Korean War at the end of 1950. Since that time, it would appear these blessings have been removed. They never won a proper war since then. Some of the wars that they've come up with have been, they've not just been defeats. They've had their noses really, really rubbed in it. We're talking primarily here about America, but of course Britain was tagging along with most of them. The Korean War, 1950 to 1953. In reality, this is a proxy war between the West and communism, i.e. Russia and China. While North Korea was backed by the Soviet Union and Communist China, South Korea was backed by the US and NATO allies. No peace treaty was ever signed. So technically, this war is actually still ongoing. They had a sort of an agreement to you stop shooting at us and we'll stop shooting at you kind of thing. But it was very vague. And the South didn't even sign it. The Department of the American Department of Defense acknowledges that almost 40,000 of its servicemen died either in battle or in other from other causes. British casualties were over 1,000, and so on. The signatories of the July 27th agreement in 1953 agreed to end hostilities with the heads of the UN command, the North Korean army, and of Chinese troops on the Korean Peninsula. South Korea is not a signee, and the agreement specifically says this is not a peace treaty. So when you look at the problems today between South Korea and North Korea, this gives you some idea of the background. These guys are still basically at war. And America is in there supporting South Korea, even to the tune of threatening to put atomic weapons in there, making atomic weapons available to the South Korean people to protect themselves. So America walked away from that one in total ignominy. They lost all these people. It cost them a fortune. That war cost America around $400 billion in today's value. 400, a mere of That's petty cash, a mere 400 billion. Then we come to Vietnam, another debacle, 1962-1973. Again, the war was between North Vietnam, communist, and the Southern Vietnam. There were over 58,000 U.S. military fatalities in the Vietnam War. The U.S. withdrew its forces in 1973. Some claim this to avoid another humiliating defeat. They just packed up and left. In 1975, North Vietnam finally defeated South Vietnam and took control of the country. This was a North Vietnamese Viet Cong victory. And when you consider that America had B-52 bombers out there, which carry like 100 tons of bombs at a time, one plane, 100 tons of bombs, that's 10 times as much as the biggest load a Lancaster bomber could carry in the Second War. They managed to carry one of those 10-ton blockbuster bombs that Barnes Wallace designed as an earthquake bomb, to go blasting through concrete pens and all the sort of other toys that the Germans had. Quite remarkable, 100 tons. And they had a whole stack of these there. In fact, there's so many they have there. If you go onto there's a place you can check on the internet, somewhere in the desert in America, they have all the planes that have served their life. They part them up because they don't degrade. There's no water or not much moisture and so on. And they use them, they break them down for spares and so on. And you go and you look and you fly over this lot and you see row upon row upon row of B-52 bombers. Fighter jets are wall to wall. There are thousands of them, literally. It's hard to imagine so much stuff in a scrapyard. This must have cost a fortune. Well, it did cost a fortune. It did cost a fortune. North Vietnamese Colonel Tin, accepting the surrender of South Vietnam later in the day, remarked, "You have nothing to fear. Between Vietnamese, there are no victors and no vanquished. Only the Americans have been defeated." Which is a very interesting concept. And evidently, the takeover, the crossover in power was quite smooth. There were very little hassles after that. The war in Vietnam cost around $1 trillion in today's dollars. Now, remind you of what a trillion is. If you had $1 million in $100 bills, you could put them in a Tesco shopping bag and carry them around. There's nothing there. If you had a billion, you could put them on a 3-foot square pallet, 3 foot high. If you had a trillion, you'd have 3-foot pallets covering 1 acre too deep. So there's a big jump from a billion to a trillion. Now, you wouldn't think so when you look at how they talk about trillions today. Very worrying, the numbers they talk about. And then, of course, we come down to the latest one, which is just finished a couple of years ago, the war in Afghanistan. You will think any government person with a slight knowledge of history would have thought twice about getting involved in Afghanistan. The problem is, if you look at a map where Afghanistan is, it's blocking trade routes. The old trade routes all went through Afghanistan. You've got mountains, you've got passes, the Khyber Pass, and so on. They're needed for trade. By blocking off that, America could control a lot of China's trade. This is what it's all about. It virtually, in every case of a war, it will come down to money or trade. Very little into the politics of things. This particular mess stemmed from the fact that they got control. The Russians had been dismally defeated after throwing everything they could. Before then, the French had a go at controlling the country. If you go back further than that, you have the British trying to control the country. Every single one of them got sent packing by... Perhaps you could be careful which word you use today. How can I put this? A simplified ethnic army. In other words, peasants. Peasants! Most of the Vietnamese, North Vietnamese soldiers were using British 303 Lee Enfield rifles made for World War I. America was using Phantom jets flying at 700 miles an hour. They were flying B-52s and bombing whole areas completely flat. And they got beat. Most Vietnamese soldiers didn't wear boots. They wore flip-flops. They got beat. The Americans were beaten by, a bunch of farmers. Frightening. You can't think of anything, frankly, more humiliating than those. I've watched the last bunch of helicopters lifting people off the U.S. embassy in Saigon, and all the people outside the gates cheering. Utterly amazing. But if that was bad, Afghanistan was a total debacle. The United States' longest war. The last U.S. military forces left Afghanistan in 2021, leaving it under Taliban rule. They also left behind a huge amount of weapons, making the Taliban the best-equipped terrorist group on the planet. This war ended in a decisive military defeat. It was also a geopolitical disaster for the USA. It couldn't have been worse. They lost everything. They lost billions in equipment, as you'll see in a minute. The war in Afghanistan cost around $2.3 trillion in today's money. So you got your acre, and the pallets are all 60, with a few on top as well. Utterly amazing. After almost two decades of conflict, an insurgent army from one of the world's poorest nations, oh, that's a good way of putting it, that's a good way of it, gets rid of all the words that would have been derogatory. An insurgent army from one of the world's poorest nations inflicted a decisive military defeat on the US, the global superpower that upholds the unipolar world order. If that doesn't make people feel bad, I don't know what if they've got any understanding of what's happened to them. The US government's total failure in Afghanistan, the longest war in American history, signifies a crucial moment and a turning point in world history. The Soviet Union collapsed just 2 years after the Red Army was defeated and withdrew from Afghanistan. We're 2 years on now. I wonder what's going to happen to America. It's certainly brewing up for some big problems. The U.S. military's presence in Afghanistan was a strategic roadblock to Russia, China, and Iran's goals of creating a powerful geopolitical group in Eurasia that could challenge the U.S.-led world order. It's happened. It's called BRICS. China just sits manipulating. Oh, they're not involved too much, no. Of course they are. Control it. And their avowed intention is to drop the dollar, which they are dropping like a hot potato. And it's getting, every month you hear somebody else is now using the dollar to separate, to settle debts. The Taliban forcing the U.S. military out of Afghanistan, the door to a more coherent geopolitical alliance in Eurasia, is now wide open. And it's happened already. This article was written 2 years ago. It's already happened. We've got the BRICS. They're all getting together. They're all agreeing to trade with one currency. And they've made it quite clear they're not interested in war. They're interested in trade. But we all know that if you control the trade, then, war's never very far away. After the Americans left, Taliban fighters strolled through the airport they now controlled, littered with debris, posing for photographs with captured vehicles, aircraft, and equipment. Taliban leaders reviewed a special forces unit equipped with weapons and gear captured from the U.S.-trained Afghan army on the Kabul runway. It is a historical day and a historical moment. We liberated our country from a great power. That's the insurgent army from one of the world's poorest nations. How did they do it? They did it because that's what God wanted to happen. It was another slap in the face. It was a bit more than a slap in the face, really. Quite incredible. A report from Fox News on Saturday highlighted the scope of the crisis unfolding in Afghanistan as the network claims the Taliban now control, listen carefully, 75,000 vehicles. That includes tanks, armored personnel carriers, Humvees, Jeeps, big trucks, tankers, tank transporters. 75,000. 600,000 weapons, which would include things like field guns and portable nasties. And $85 billion in funding, cash in the bank, they got. The Taliban just gained a massive new war chest, complete with US-made Humvees, planes, helicopters, night vision goggles and drones, plus 11 former US, fully equipped US bases, which they literally just walked out and closed the door. Didn't even bother locking. And this Taliban are one of the worst terrorist organizations on the planet. And they couldn't defeat them. They couldn't defeat them. God wouldn't allow them to defeat them. You see, if they'd had pride in their power, all it would have taken is one bomb. One bomb in a remote area. A small tactical nuclear weapon. Bang, splat, everything dead for a radius of 4 or 5 miles. And then the message, we've got hundreds of these, and if you continue, we'll continue to use them until there's nothing left in your country. Back in the good old days when Queen Victoria was on the throne and there was a problem, it was over, send the gunboat. That's all it took. That gunboat would pull up at the wherever it was, and suddenly the problem kind of melted away. Because people knew that that was just the forerunner of a whole bunch that would have just taken their country over. We didn't stand any nonsense. We didn't stand nonsense from people. Rightly or wrongly. But there you go. That's the way history goes. These people have got Black Hawk attack helicopters at their disposal. Where they're going to get pilots from is another question. But, you know, it's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. Now we come to China's main interest in all this. The fall of Kabul is the end of the American century. Little wonder that the Chinese media is filled with jubilation as they discuss Silk Road deals with the Taliban. In other words, they want the trade to go through Afghanistan. I think it's up in the northern areas that they will actually be using. So the trade can go. Been a lot, just to put an insert here on COVID. There's been a lot written about COVID. Some people say it's a farce. Some people say it's a joke. Some people say it doesn't exist. Some people even deny that viruses exist. You can have any opinion you want, but you know what? Back off and ask a simple question. Who gains? Follow the money. Always follow the money. Who gained from COVID? I'll tell you who gained. China. Hand over fist. They're making billions out of it because they started off by locking everybody up in their cities. And the Western cities did the same thing. And what did that do? Flattened trade. It's wrecked the economies of Britain and America. They've had to give out Well, America just printed $1 trillion to hand out to people to give them a help with their bills. We've been getting a bit of help here even, with cost of living allowance. It's all to do with COVID. Our supply lines are damaged almost irreparably. And to that, of course, God's also just tweaking a few things. Like we saw in the news the other day, the Panama Canal was drying up. Been a bit of drought. And evidently, they need a lot of water to operate the locks. Do you understand? You get a 60,000-ton container ship, goes into a dock, and you've got to pump all that water out or pump water in, whichever the case may be. That's a lot of water. And eventually, of course, the water all ends up down at the bottom. And it's not being replaced. So they've had to cut the transits from 38 a day down to 20 a day. And they reckon by the time we get to February, it'll be down to 15 a day. So all those ships are all going to be piling up. And we've been warned that we will, in England here, in Britain, we will not be getting certain things before Christmas. Fruit and being one of the big ones. And also, I regret to say, wine from Chile. That's all going to be lying in a ship somewhere. So if you like a tipple, get out now and buy it while they've still got it in the shops, because they won't have it in a few weeks. So who scored from COVID? You see, the bottom line is, it's COVID linked with the climate change fiasco. And it is a fiasco, almost certainly. People are saying, oh, our little islands are going to be overrun with water by 2000, 3000 or whatever. Excuse me, we have 150 stations all around the world monitoring sea levels. They haven't changed in over 100 years. So where did the lie come from? You know, if you look at these CO2 things, you know, carbon dioxide is essential. The fact that there's more carbon dioxide in the air, plants are growing faster and bigger. As I say, you know, there's so many lies going around that it's difficult to sort out the truth. But again, look at what it's caused. It's caused a weakened America and Britain more money to buy windmills that don't work if the wind doesn't blow, and solar panels that certainly don't work at night. And I think in Wales, probably only work half the time. And meanwhile, we've been conned by a bunch of left-wing politicians into closing down our coal-fired power stations and our nuclear things. So we take away the reliable source of power, we substitute it with a very expensive, non-reliable source of power. Who scores? Western productivity is going down, Eastern productivity is going up, as is their bank balance. There is a movement from the West to the East. That's what a demon-possessed being told Mr. McNair in India years ago. He said the emphasis now is moving to the East. And he was right. So, you know, whatever you think about COVID, what it did was it stifled our economy in this country. We've lost so many small businesses. There was a program the other day we watched on television, and it was a company that makes pork pies, Melton Mowbray, or whatever they call them. World famous. Been there since the year dot. Closed down. They weren't selling because people weren't going to the pub and buying them. The pubs have all been closing down. In wholesale slaughter when you look at public houses. We used to have pubs everywhere. Not anymore. They're dying down. And you can tell everything is dying down because the banks are all closing branches. It's the whole West, the whole Western nations are contracting as the East expands. What is it? God is doing this to weaken our nations and make them ready for the final crunch, which we'll look at in a minute. Now we've got war in Ukraine. The US is supporting a war in Ukraine. They're also supporting a war in Israel with Hamas. They're increasing their military presence in the Far East to try and dissuade China from attacking Taiwan. Do you really think the Chinese fear the Americans? Not on the record that they've got. Not at all. The thing is, it's one thing having weapons, it's another thing using them. China wouldn't think twice about using nuclear weapons. But the biggest problem of all is this is all being financed on nothing. Mickey Mouse money, created by somebody in a bank, click, click, click on a keyboard. Boom, it's there. They have got the decency to borrow it from some nations, which we'll see just now, but that's another problem. The United States has given Israel more aid than any other nation since World War II. Up until this date, Israel has had $260 billion worth of aid from the US. That's why they're still there. Now, the next problem, the power of the almighty dollar is dying. You know, Leviticus 26 verse 19, just make a note of it because you know the scripture so well. I will break the pride of your power. Yes, and part of that power is the mighty greenback. It's always been the American attitude. Something goes wrong, open another barrel of money. No problem. We'll sort it out. It was up the other day, somebody was complaining about the standard of reading in the schools. And the education guy said, well, the answer, we need more funds. We need more money. No, they need more teachers. And they need more kids under control. It's not just about military power, it's about wealth. Because wealth and military power are literally hand in hand. A huge story, basically ignored by the corporate media and little noticed even by the conservative media, took place at the end of November. We're only talking now a couple of weeks ago. Wall Street seemed not to notice. A major global oil producer, the United Arab Emirates, abruptly stopped selling its oil in US dollars and is joining forces with BRICS nations of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa to forge ahead with its de-dollarization world. BRICS recently expanded its membership to include the United Arab Emirates, along with Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, and Argentina. This is now one massive trading power block. That's almost half the trade that goes on this, on the planet, which a few years ago was all in dollars. If I wanted to sell something to you in another country, I would have to buy dollars to pay you in dollars. You in turn would take the dollars to the bank and change them back into rubles or shekels or whatever you use. And each time that happens, a little cut is paid to the US. Very clever. $150 billion a year, I think they were earning because of that. It's all down to almost half now. So they're losing out hand over fist. What this means is, and this is the real danger, what this means is the US can no longer be able to benefit from a situation in which it continuously increases its military budgets and runs up huge debts financed by China, Saudi Arabia, and other sovereign states. In fact, China and Saudi Arabia, two of the biggest financiers of American debt, have already started unloading U.S. treasuries like hot potatoes. The two BRICS members have offloaded hundreds of billions of dollars worth of U.S. treasuries in recent months. This is the beginning of the end for the global dollar dominance. And when these dollars are taken out of circulation, do you know what happens to them? They go back to America. And then you have too much money chasing too few goods, which is inflation. And it's already happening, and the government's covering it up left, right, and center. But, you know, we talk to people in the States who say, well, it might be 9%, but not in our grocery store, it's not. Not when we buy our petrol for the car, it's not. In fact, everything we buy and thing is more than, way more than, it's more like 20% or more. But It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse because if you read in Leviticus, read through chapter 27, and if you don't do this, I intensify the punishment seven times. And then he gives a bit more, and do that, I'll increase it another seven times. So in other words, as we go down into this final death throes of the West, of the modern Israelites, we are going to see an intensification of punishment by God to knock the stuffings out of our people and get them back to some sort of common sense. And there aren't going to be very many people at the end who actually get it, but some will. Some will. Renowned radio host, filmmaker, book author, and archaeological dig expert Steve Quayle says just about every aspect of American life is under new threat from unimaginable debt. Well, two things. What he's saying is pretty good. But just note, and this is a big problem today, who is this guy? He is a radio host, he's a filmmaker, he's a book author, and an archaeological dig expert. And he's pontificating about the dollar and the debt in the country. Now, he's obviously a clever man, but you get this all the time when it comes to the global warming and climate change bunch. The Pope gets up and makes these huge pronouncements. With respect, he hasn't got a clue. He's just parroting what somebody else wants him to parrot because he's a socialist. And what we're doing in the world today, we're seeing a split in the world. We're seeing the socialist left and the conservative right going off in completely different directions. Notice the Germans they've reinstated all their coal-fired power stations. And they've delayed closing down all their nuclear power stations. They've taken, 11 billion euros out of their projected budget next year, which were all the green initiatives that they were going to do. We can't do it. You see, the German philosophy is earn it, spend it. It's not create it out of thin air and spend it, or build up debt and spend it. They have got this thing because what they went through with the problems they had after the First World War of hyperinflation, when literally you got money in the morning and by night time it was worthless, that bad. And they're very much, no, we're not going down that road. They said that. We are not going down this road. If we've got it, we'll spend it. If we haven't got it, tough. We're not borrowing. There is a record credit card debt, an implosion in commercial real estate. Millions are delinquent on mortgage payments and car payments. On top of all that, hundreds of trillions, and it's actually 600 plus trillion, in unpayable derivative debt that Warren Buffett called weapons of mass destruction is coming due. It's all about to head in a so-called debt reset that we've been talking about for years. And please don't ask me to explain derivatives. I have read countless informative articles. I've only just got to spell it properly. But seriously, I can't work out what it's all about. It's too complex. The word fraud comes to mind, among other things. The question is, what is the final touch? In martial arts, it's called the dimmak, or death touch. What is the death touch that's going to push the leaning financial tower of Pisa over? I'm telling you, it's going to be the derivative debt. $1 trillion of credit card debt can never be repaid. Why does our government spend money they cannot even raise in the markets? They can't even borrow the money now, and they're still spending it. Please don't try this at home. You'll end up behind bars very quickly. In closing, he says, we are watching the complete taking apart of the Western financial system based on the petrodollar. This insanity is now actually part of the takedown and takeover of the United States. And he makes a statement which is very interesting. I believe it's over for the United States. I don't believe there is a political solution to a spiritual problem. Which is very interesting because that's the problem. And the spiritual problem is greed. News article said, for well over 80 years I've been a speculator of America in decline and questioned why the so-called smart, educated people not only allowed our country to rot, but actually helped to accelerate the process. And he goes on down and he says, since then I've come to believe the problem is genetic, a common gene that is carried by the huge majority of the population, and that gene is greed. The top echelons of our government act and function driven by greed. Think about it. The large mega corporations act and make decisions based on greed. Our banking system is controlled by those driven by greed. Those who control our health and medical establishment make their decisions based on greed. Even our military makes up their decisions based on greed. Most of our wars begin under false pretenses just to make money. The greed even filters down to an individual level, as so many people will do almost anything for money. The criminal elements of our own population rob, kill, cheat and steal only to feed their desire for more money. And you see this in America now, they won't prosecute people unless it's over $1,000. So you can take your sack into a shop and put $900 worth of stuff and walk out and nobody can do anything. All this is called capitalism, to make it sound nice and desirable, but it's actually just the accepted method to acquire more money by all those driven by greed. If greed could be eliminated throughout the entire human population, everyone would live in paradise. I think I'll send him an email and tell him, you got it right, but not quite. But not quite. The secret is to how do you eliminate greed, and that's what we're going to be all about. Mr. Armstrong writes, well, now I think I can see what's going to be the very event that's going to trigger it, and it's the economic situation in the world. But lust of money, or love of money, desire to get and to have more and more and more and more and never have enough, which of course is greed. It's what is possessing the world that is based on a type of living and a lifestyle of getting and everybody wanting to get more and more and more. And one nation wants to get more than other nations. Now, when the financial system breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. I just wanted to say this much. Maybe you can begin to see how serious this thing can become. Shouldn't have been that way. You know, just make a note of Deuteronomy 28, verse 12. It says, you shall lend to many nations, you shall not borrow. That's where we should be. But turn to verse 43. It says, the foreigners living among you will become stronger and stronger, or you become weaker and weaker. They will lend money to you, but you will not lend to them. They will be the head and you will be the tail. Our prime minister is a foreigner. If you look at many of the members of parliament, with respect, they're foreigners. We also have a massive number of women now involved in running the country. This shouldn't be. The Bible talks about women ruling over them. We weren't designed to do that job. We weren't designed for the job at all. But that's it. At the end time, what do we expect? U.S. debt held by foreign countries is $7.7 trillion, on which the U.S. is paying over $700,000 in interest. Next year it will surpass the $1 trillion. In interest! They only collect $2 trillion in tax. So half the tax money is going to pay the interest on the money they borrowed last year. So then they've got to borrow another trillion to follow the gap. And right now it's almost $34 trillion. The last time I looked, which was just before the feast, it was just hitting $33 trillion. See, these numbers don't mean anything after a while. You just buy a bigger field and put more pallets out there. The U.S. national debt is now $33.9 trillion. Go into usdebtclock.com. It's got a live clock there, and you see the debt going up. It's going up $100,000 at a click. At a dizzy rate, it's going up as well. Credit card debt, $1.29 trillion. Total personal debt, I presume this is mortgages and cars and all the rest of it, $25 trillion. Currency and credit derivatives, $637 trillion. Stranger who is within you will become stronger and stronger. The U.S. foreign-born population has now hit 49.5 million people. That is astounding. So where are the Americans? And of course, that doesn't include all the illegal immigrants that we've lost track of. Now, what about the morals? You know, dare I just say woke? It's Isaiah 59. Let's read what God talks about. No wonder he's punishing his people the way he is. No wonder he's punishing the way he is. Isaiah 59, verse 7. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of lawlessness, iniquity, lawlessness. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. The way of peace they know not, and there is no judgment in their doings. They have made them crooked paths, and whosoever goes shall not know peace. Peace is getting in short supply. Check with the folks in Gaza at the moment. But why? Why is God being so nasty to our poor people? Yeah. Well, satanic idol and cult and altar on display in the Iowa state capitol. That's right. Iowa lawmakers demanded that Governor Kim Reynolds remove the satanic display from the Iowa Capitol building. Brad Sherman doesn't just want to remove the satanic mirrored caped statue of Baphomet, complete with black and red holiday wreaths with a pentagram on his center, but wants to make sure nothing of this happens again. He talks about it being disgusting. And you see, the trouble is these people point to it as being, it's all about diversity and inclusion, as you'll see in one of the other comments here. The Disney Corporation. You know, when we had our kids were young, if somebody said we're going to take the kids to the cinema, and we say, what's on? Oh, it's a Disney film. Great, no problem, off you go. The failing Disney Corporation is still digging the woke hole to bury itself in with its latest Christmas movie aimed at teens, just another example of its continuing obsession to jam radical LGBT themes in every movie and TV show it makes for kids. If you thought you were to be tuning in to see the newest holiday flick, The Naughty Nine, you will see fun Christmas romp. Instead, you'll see be confronted with a family headed by a pair of gay dads and another scene where two boys are confiding in each other about another male they think is a hottie. That's what they're feeding our kids. And you know what? You get this to the kids, as it's been well proven over the years. Give on 20 years, and those are the adults. Satanic Christmas tree draws lawmakers' ire. A gender diversity tree calling on festival attendees to protect trans kids was also the subject of considerable blowback, and somebody jumped up and down. But you see, here's the problem. Here's the argument. The response of the museum's chief executive officer, Jacqueline Frank, told the Green Bay Gazette that if it is to be an inclusive organization, it must make steps to ensure everyone who visits feels comfortable. Who am I to say this thing that you believe system and outside the mainstream is bad? I can't judge that. You might think Satan's wonderful. Okay, that's fine with me. You see, it's subtle. Those who lead you cause you to stray. The U.S. government under Mr. Biden has handed out $4.1 billion in taxpayer money to promote the LGBT ideology and lifestyle choices around the globe in just 3 fiscal years. Supported by the government. And then you get the real weirdos. Scotland's woke police call paedophiles minor attracted people. How low can you get? The chief constable of the police in Scotland is under fire for referring to paedophiles by their preferred term, minor attracted people, or MAPS. They need to be provided with the necessary support, treatment and guidance to help prevent criminal activities. People are so mixed up in their head that, yeah. Government accused of effectively lowering the age of consent to 13. UN expert. There's two things that worry me about that statement. UN is one, and the other one is expert. For those of you who don't know, an ex is a has-been, and a spurt is a drip under pressure. And really, these people. Religious liberty must yield to LGBT demands. I would like to see him say that to Jesus Christ. Splat. Oh, yes. A UN certified expert on sexual orientation and gender identity declared Wednesday the religious communities must yield to the demands of LGBT persons to avoid charges of violence and discrimination. And we'll just have one more to round it all off. Mr. Biden calls gay and transgender Americans the bravest and most inspiring people I've ever known. Can you believe this? From the President of the United States. Even on a bad day, I can't imagine that being said, but it was recorded by all the newspapers and so on. So, where are we now? Oh, please, near the end. Don't you find yourself getting really angry when you see this stuff? We mustn't be angry. We're here as observers, and we're here observing what God has told us is going to happen. And it's going to happen because he is doing it. He is in total control. And the quote again, this world trouble began in 1914. And that's what Mr. Armstrong said. And they can't form a government. They can't form a world ruling government. And let me just look at this COP thing we've just had. 80,000 delegates plus 20-odd thousand hangers-on, experts, protection people, and so on. So there's over 100,000 people involved for 2 weeks. So allowing for the fact that they work 8 hours a day, which I'm sure they work more than that in meetings, but on to the night in some cases, and they only work 6 days a week, that's something like 6.5 million person hours. I have to be careful I use the right pronouns. Person hours. And the end result is, don't hold your breath. There isn't one. Oh, we've got to reduce this. Oh, we've got... How do you reduce it? A whole society runs on petrol and diesel and gas and coal. The windmills don't work properly. They blow up. They don't produce when the wind doesn't blow. Germany's just curtailed a whole load because they put them in one area and then the wind just gave up. They just sit there. Turn to Isaiah 30, because this gets nice and interesting here. Isaiah 30. I know we go back to the scripture time and time again, but it is so important. But I want to do something here. I want to check the context and the timing. Because there's a bit more to it than perhaps we first saw. Verse 8. Now go right before them in a table and note in a book that it may be for a time to come forever and ever. In other words, it's been written down for us today. This is a rebellious people, lying children. Children that will not hear the law of God. The one thing that will give them everything they want. Security, wealth, etc. Which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, speaking to us smooth things, prophesy deceits. Get you out of the way, turn aside out the path, cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. He's too small. He's too small. We're not interested in him. Wherefore, thus says the Holy One of Israel, because you despise this word and trust in oppression and perverseness and stay thereon, therefore this iniquity shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling out in a high wall, whose breaking comes suddenly in an instant. And he shall break it as the breaking of a potter's vessel that is broken in pieces and shall not spare, so that they will not be found in the bursting of a shard enough to take some dust out of the hearth or a bit of water out of a pit. Yeah. Completely smashed. And it will happen suddenly. After this comes the great tribulation. And then we can have peace. But only after Joel 2:28 has happened and God pours out his Holy Spirit on the people, which reverses what happened in the Garden of Eden. That's the key. Without that, we can't function as teachers. But notice the context here. Carrying right on. Verse 18 of Isaiah 30. And therefore will the Eternal wait, that he may be gracious unto you, and therefore will be exalted, that he may have mercy on you. For the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are they that wait for him. For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. They shall weep no more. He will be very gracious unto you at the voice of your cry. When you shall hear it, he will answer. So right at the end, the people who call on God, who realize that, yeah, we kind of messed up. We don't know how to do things. We need to get back and do it God's way. Then it says, though the Lord gave you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction or correction, You shall not your teachers be removed into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers. Right after this sudden fall, we know that that leads into the tribulation, and right on it follows straight into the teachers bit. Us. And your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. When you turn to the left or the right. And this is what God wanted from the very beginning. Turn to Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26. Some years ago I saw this scripture and it hit me between the eyes. Leviticus 26 verse 12. He's been talking about the blessings for obedience. I, God, this is Christ talking, I will walk among you and will be your God, and you will be my people. If he's going to walk among them, they'll see him, surely. This is the millennium. This is what God wanted way back. This is what Adam and Eve rejected. Because don't forget, God was there. Christ was there with them as the Word. He was training them. He taught them. They wouldn't have it. They'd rather listen to Satan. So, in conclusion, as we get closer to the end of the age, we watch as God steps up his punishment on modern day Israel. And just a quick overview of Leviticus 26, verse 17, I will turn against you and you will be defeated by your enemies. Tick! Happened. Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan. You can guarantee it's probably going to happen in the Ukraine as well. Then I myself will be hostile to you. I will personally strike you with calamity seven times over for your sins. Oops, turning up the power. Verse 25, I will send armies against you to carry out the curse of the covenant that you have broken. Verse 26, I will destroy your food supply so that 10 women will need only one oven to bake bread for their families. They will ration your food by weight, and though you have food to eat, you will not be satisfied. There'll always be bits of food, but it won't be the best, and it'll be jolly expensive, and you won't be able to get very much of it for those who live through this period. Verse 28, then I will give full vent to my hostility. I myself will punish you seven times over for your sins. verse 31. I will make your cities desolate and destroy your places of pagan worship. And then a verse that's hard to take in. Finally, verse 32. Yes, I myself will devastate your land, and your enemies who come to occupy it will be appalled at what they see. Frankly, if you go to some of the major cities in America today, you're appalled at what you see. People sitting around looking like zombies and put themselves so full of drugs, they just got to sit there staring at the pavement, using the main street as a public toilet. It happened recently, Mr. Biden went to stay in some hotel, and as he came out the front of the hotel, there's people lying in the gutter. America the beautiful, as it was. Back in the 60s even, you went to America, you had to go to San Francisco. You had to go to Los Angeles. These places are fabulous. Well, they were fabulous. When I went to Pasadena in the late 60s, I was told, you drive through Pasadena, you have all your buttons down on the car. Wasn't that good. Mr. Armstrong gave a warning 40 years ago, remembering in God's terms 40 years is a few minutes, but already the noose is around our necks and is almost tightening daily. Skyrocketing inflation, devaluation of the dollar in all foreign markets. Our economic ills are starting greatly to reduce our standard of living. I warn you, prepare to greatly reduce your standard of living. Even greater punishments are to follow. I know it's not encouraging, but you know what it is? Because all this has got to happen before this whole society can be gotten to the stage where it gets involved in all the end time events and follows blindly leaders who promised them protection. That's what happened with COVID. The government said, oh no, we'll do this, we'll protect you, we'll do this, we'll get shots, we'll get this. Did it work? Well, Sweden didn't buy into it, and they came out the other end better off than we did. So again, look at what the results of something is. And with COVID now, we can see that, yes, there was people that died. The interesting thing with COVID is it hit the older people. The flu that struck after the war, the First World War, hit younger people. Young, healthy fellows, men, were the biggest victims of that flu. So, turn to Matthew 24, the final, well, not quite the final scripture. Matthew 24. Verse 33, so likewise you, this is aimed at you, me, personally, when you shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the door. We sit here today, we've got some food in the fridge, got a nice warm bed, got clothes, got most of what we need to enjoy a reasonable standard of living. Do you know what? It could all be gone on Monday morning. Literally. When this financial thing crunches, the banks will close. You won't be able to use your credit card. And money will be, for a short time, the only thing you can use. But you soon run out of that. And we will live through part of this. Remember, the Israelites went through the first three plagues, I think it was. They lived through the first three plagues. And then there's a cutoff. That cutoff looks like it is at 1335. Remember what it says in 1 Thessalonians 5? It says, when they say peace and safety, indicating there hadn't been peace and safety. It won't take long. If you cut the electricity off, particularly in big city, within a week, there's people dying in the streets. No drinking water, no sanitation, no food. What do? You've got millions of people crammed into a tiny area. Some of them living in the States particularly, huge tower blocks. You don't really feel like going shopping if you go to walk down the stairs from the 18th floor. It's a bit tiring. And then when you get down there's no shops anyway. No, it will impact. It will impact greatly and quickly. In fact, people are going to be gobsmacked at the speed at which everything literally crumbles. God says, in one day, there's one scripture that says, in one day I will, one day. That's all it will take. And it's this, as the man says, what is the thing that will kill it all? It's just debt. It's greed. It's the ultimate end of the way we are living today. Debt and greed. And the greed goes to more debt because you've got to have it now. You can't save up the money and buy it later on. But you train to do that when there's a lot of inflation. You see, if you want to buy a car today for £20,000, say, you can have the use of that car for 3 or 4 or 5 years while you pay for it off. But at the end of that 5 years, to replace that car, it's probably going to cost you £30,000. And this is how it goes on all the time. So to have a lot of debt when there's a lot of inflation is actually beneficial. It doesn't play to be prudent. As I say, everything's against doing things the right way. But of course, we're heading for a future where there is no usury. There is no usury. And people will be taught how to look after things and you know, not to punch above their weight. Because this is what has happened to America. America is like a lot of people today in our society who've got 15 and 20 credit cards, all maxed out. So every month the bills all come in with a whole bunch of stuff for interest. So they try and pay that interest off and a little bit of the debt they've incurred in that month. But the bottom line goes up a little bit. And next month they don't pay it all off, goes up another little bit. Until eventually you can very quickly end up multiple thousands down the swanee and no way of ever repaying it. That's the terrible curse. And unfortunately, this is what America has done particularly. Britain's just as bad. Our problems are roughly a quarter of what the Americans are doing. In many numbers, if you look at the abortions in America, is around about 1 million a year. In England, it's 250,000, which is a quarter, which is commensurate with the population. So we're just the same. Our debt's the same. It's also mentioned now in trillions. It's mentioned in trillions. And it can never be repaid. Now I get the feeling when Jesus Christ says, hold fast that which you have. That way of life that you've got. That way of life you're going to be teaching in the very near future. Hang on to it. Don't let any man steal that crown.